Continuing in Mitzvah Shin Pei Aleph 381, which is the mitzvah to eat the Pesach Sheni with matzah and maror, the same way that when there's Pesach Rishon, you have to eat it along with matzah and maror, so too with a Pesach Sheni. However, there's a major difference, which is that in Pesach Rishon, you're not allowed to own chametz at all. You're not allowed, certainly not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to own it. Whereas for Pesach Sheni, you are totally permitted to have any chametz that you want in the house. You could have a loaf of bread if you find you'll enjoy your Pesach Sheni repast with a loaf of bread. So you're allowed to have a loaf of bread on the table as long as you make your sandwich, your shawarma with the matzah and the maror and the Pesach Sheni meat. Then that is totally fine. And the Minchas Chinuch even writes that he says maybe from Rashi it doesn't sound this way, but on Chumash, Minchas Chinuch writes that he even thinks that maybe that this requirement is only for the kezias of the Pesach Sheni that with which you actually fulfill your obligation. But let's say you want to eat more than a kezias of Pesach Sheni. You have a whole large animal and there are not enough people, so you get more than a kezias of the Pesach Sheni. So you could have one shawarma with matzah and one shawarma with chametz. You can even physically have the Pesach Sheni together with chametz and eat it together and make a sandwich. As long as you have the requisite matzah for the one part of the Pesach Sheni. So this seems really weird to us. But of course, the restrictions regarding the ownership and eating of chametz are nowhere near as restrictive, in fact, non-existent by Pesach Sheni as they are in Pesach Rishon. Again, there's only the positive obligation to eat the matzah with the Pesach Sheni, but there is no prohibition whatsoever from eating chametz. Of course, you wouldn't be allowed to eat the bread that Minchas Chinuch points out as well. You wouldn't be allowed to eat the bread that besides the matzah with the actual kezias with which you yotze the mitzvah, because that would be an issue not necessarily of combining the Pesach Sheni with a chametzdika thing, but the issue of reshus mevatel mitzvah, that we have the concept that when you have a mitzvah to eat something, so you're not allowed to eat it with something that is not a mitzvah to eat per se. So for example, that's why, so nowadays we know that when we have the Seder, the regular Seder, and what would be the first Pesach, so we know that we have Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel, that we have the Korech, that we eat, we don't have the Pesach sacrifice, but in reminiscence of the Pesach sacrifice that was eaten like a shawarma, so we make a sandwich with the matzah and the maror. So the question is, so why not just eat that? Why do you need the matzah separately first, and then the maror separately, and then the sandwich? Just eat the sandwich. So the answer is that nowadays, that there's no Korban Pesach, there's an independent obligation on a deraisa level to eat matzah. That's not dependent on Korban Pesach. But the maror is dependent on Korban Pesach. So nowadays, the obligation to eat maror on Seder night is only derabanan. So therefore, since you have something that's deraisa combined with something that's derabanan, so it's like the taste of the two combined, so you don't receive the full mitzvah experience of the matzah. So therefore, it's insufficient nowadays just to make a sandwich with the matzah and the maror and eat it together. That's why you have to eat the matzah separately and the maror separately before you make the sandwich. So that would be the same thing too by the Pesach Sheni. If you there's no mitzvah to eat the Pesach Sheni with chametz. The only mitzvah is to eat it with matzah. So therefore, if you made a sandwich with chametz, then you have the issue. If you were trying to be yotze your mitzvah of eating the Pesach Sheni with that sandwich, then that wouldn't work simply because, not because of any issue of chametz, but because it's an issue of reshus mevatel mitzvah. You have something that not like, before we gave the example of matzah more, one's deraisa, one's derabanan. Here, one's deraisa and one's nothing. It's optional. So therefore, if you ate the two together, so the chometzdika bread would detract from the mitzvah eating, which is the Korban Pesach Sheni. So that might be the problem with that. That's also why, you have, which we'll discuss more in a second, so we have sometimes people at the Seder nowadays eat two different types of maror, that you have the lettuce and you have the horseradish. So sometimes people think, even if they want to eat the lettuce, they feel like it's cheating because it's not such a strong taste. So therefore, you take your lettuce and they sprinkle a little horseradish on top of the lettuce and then eat it together. So the big problem with that is that the whole reason for eating both lettuce and horseradish is because we're not sure which is the correct maror. Okay, nowadays we're pretty confident that the correct maror is the lettuce. That the horseradish was a famous article that's one of the, it was written in a YU publication called Gesher.
Oh yeah.
And it was in volume 8, I think. So this is probably the most widely quoted YU publication in the Haredi world. That ever such a seminal article, tracing the whole history about how horseradish is not really maror. First, it started with the leaves, horseradish leaves, which are closer to real maror, and then because they didn't have the lettuce available in Europe, and then it went down to the horseradish root. And there's a whole discussion about what's going on over there. You can see the article; it's a very good, clear article. So some people said, well, maybe before. This article, his name is Schaefer, I think he's still alive. So he, before his article came out, so a lot of people thought, well, maybe the lettuce isn't the real maror. Again, that was only Ashkenazim. Sfardim only had lettuce, so they never heard of using horseradish, so they never had an issue. But some people were concerned that maybe the lettuce isn't the real maror because maybe our lettuce is different because it's less bitter. Whatever, we'll get into that in a few minutes, maybe. Mm-hmm. So maybe we're not sure which is the real maror, so we have to eat the horseradish. The real maror is maybe the horseradish, and then we eat the lettuce just in case. So either way, however way you look at it, it's not proper to eat the lettuce together with horseradish, because that's rishus mevat l'mitzvah. One is the correct maror, one's optional. So therefore, you should not eat both together. You should eat the kizayis of the lettuce, and if you want a kizayis of the horseradish, and if you want, afterwards you could have both of them together if you want. Again, if they are both correct maror, then there's no problem. But if they're not both correct maror, which is extremely likely, then it would be a problem. So some people use one for the maror, one for the korich. Okay, really you should use lettuce for everything, and the horseradish is just an additional thing if you... feel like having the horseradish, because not necessarily because it's a halachic obligation, because it's probably not really maror, but because it's become part of the Ashkenazi Seder experience.
Makes you cry.
Yeah, it's part of everybody grew up that, seeing their, whoever they first spent Seder with, parents or whatever, friends, that whoever the leader of the Seder would take the maror, cry. So part of the experience was watching the leader of the Seder cry as he ate the maror. So since we want to maintain that experience, so then people like to do it nowadays. But again, that would be, if you want to do that, again, optional, then that would have to be after already eating a kizayis of lettuce. Uh-huh. V'chein ma sheperishu b'merorim, says the Sefer HaChinuch. So Chazal tell us, shekol esev mar hu bichlal merorim shehizkir hakosuv, that any bitter plant, green plant, is called maror. It's you can use it on Pesach. So it's actually not entirely clear. So the Mishnah in Masechet Pesachim lists five species of green leafy vegetables that with which one can be yotze the mitzvah of maror. So one of the ones that's listed is simply called maror. It says something like chazeres, charchavina, tamcha, and maror. So the question is, there's a big machlokas as to what the Mishnah means when it says maror. Does it mean that maror is a specific species of bitter plant that they had in mind that happens to just be called maror? Or does it mean that besides the other four on this list, you could really be yotze with anything that's bitter? So the Sefer HaChinuch here is adopting the shita that you could be yotze the mitzvah with anything that's bitter. Again, all these plants mentioned in the Mishnah are green, or at least, leafy type vegetable plants. They're not related to the species of horseradish. So the question is, some of the identifications of these five species are a bit questionable. So that we don't know all of the five species. So the question then is, if one of the species included is maror, and does that mean any, if that means any bitter vegetable, then that makes life much easier for us, because all you have to do is taste it and see if it's bitter, and then you can be otzi with it. But if it's a specific species of vegetable that's only these five species, then you have to be very careful to use the only members of the exact species that are mentioned in the Mishnah. V'sha'adam yotzi dechavosu v'chulan, that you could use any of them to be fulfill the mitzvah maror. L'visha tzava lanu b'maror zecher levayimaru eschayehem. That the whole point of the maror is reminiscent of the fact that it says in the Tchumish that the Egyptians embittered our lives. So therefore, anything that creates such a mental state of remembering this, the bitterness in Egypt is good. Uvachol esav marius garadover. So any bitter plant, you will remember this. So that's another thing why people have questions about the horseradish, especially the root, is because horseradish is not bitter. Horseradish is not bitter.
What is it?
Sharp. Chad lomar. So its question is, so maybe even if you would assume that any bitter plant is good, so maybe the horseradish isn't good because horseradish is sharp. A bitter is a completely different taste.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, we have it's interesting that we have a principle as we sing every Shabbos morning. Derachea darchei noam, that the ways of the Torah are pleasantness. We know that in general, the Torah doesn't actively command us to do things that are unpleasant. Again, maybe
fasting on Yom Kippur is an exception. Yep.
Well, that's a negative. That's a negative. Don't eat.
Oh.
The Torah doesn't command an active activity that we should do to actively harm ourselves.
Okay.
Well, that's why it's the Torah says you should do it on the eighth day, so you don't remember. It's a chesed.
Yeah.
If we were like the Muslims do it on the at age 13, so that itself is derech darchei noam, because who cares? At age 8 days, nobody remembers, nobody cares, and it's all over with. That's an example of derech darchei noam. So that's why the. I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, the Gemara in Sukkah, when it's talking about the identification of the plants for the four species, so the Gemara goes through certain contenders for the position of Hadassah, what it says, Anaf Eitz Avos, and it says in the Chumash, so what does it mean? So it rejects a couple options because these plants are prickly. So the Gemara says, no, it's impossible that the Torah could have commanded us to lift up a prickly plant because then hurt our hands, because it says derecha darchinam, and you can't wear gloves when you take the four species, because that's a chatzitza, that's an improper barrier between the hands and the four species. So that would be a problem based on derecha darchinam. Again, there are hard things, if some teenagers find it excruciating not to text on Shabbos. So, but that's not an active thing. The Torah says you're not allowed to do any malacha, so texting is included in that. But the Torah doesn't command us to actively do things that harm ourselves. So here, it's funny, maybe it's a violation, the idea that the Torah would command us, everybody agrees that the Torah doesn't command us to eat horseradish. We have the option of five different species, but it's still a bit odd that there's something that's so unpleasant, especially because for a maror, you have to eat a kizayis. So sometimes, this was a major problem, because when you had only horseradish and no lettuce, so then people found it extremely difficult to eat a proper shear. Even my kizayis, which is the size of an olive, let alone if you hold a bigger shear of kizayis, an olive-sized thing of horseradish, ground horseradish, is very hard, and to eat it in kidei achilas pras, preferably as fast as possible, is not so pleasant. So it could cause real difficulty. So, let alone, there were some people that said, I think the Nesiva says this, if I'm not mistaken, he says that, or maybe he's against this, I don't remember, either he says pro this or he writes against this, he said that some people wanted to say that if you grind the horseradish, then it's no good, because it's nishtane mibriyaso, that it becomes changed, that changed, it's not like horseradish anymore, it's just like ground something. It's a little strange to say. If you grind lettuce, that would also be good for maror, but whatever it is. But there's no, and it loses the taste, so it's no good. You're not allowed to grind it. You have to take the horseradish root and chomp it whole, which is even worse. That's a problem. That's why those who held from the horseradish, yeah, so even if they held, it should be ground because it's abnormal to eat horseradish straight from the root. So they, the Vilna Gaon, who didn't have access to lettuce apparently, so he held horseradish. So he insisted that the horseradish should be ground on Yontif. Mm-hmm. Because he said, if you grind it before Yontif, then it loses too much taste.
Yes.
Even though you freshly ground horseradish, it doesn't lose its taste that fast, you know, in a couple hours. But he says, no, it has to be fresh right away. You have to grind it on Yontif. And if Pesach, the first night of Pesach falls on Shabbos, then you have to grind it as soon as possible before as close as possible to Shabbos, and put it in a sealed container so that it shouldn't, it should lose as minimal flavor as possible. So yeah, maybe it's an issue of Drecha Darchei Noam. Aval mikol makom beru lanu chacham zichron levracha. The chachamim told us that the best way to fulfill this mitzvah is with lechol achazeres, tit chazeres. So in modern Hebrew, chazeret means horseradish, which is completely wrong because even the people in the times of the Rishonim and Achronim who identified horseradish as one of the species of maror, they identified it with a different species which is called tamcha. Tamcha is one of those species mentioned in the Mishnah, so that's what they thought horseradish was. So it's very strange that in modern Hebrew somehow chazeres all of a sudden becomes the horseradish. You look at containers of ground chrein in Israel, it's labeled chazeret. So it's funny because that for sure you're not yotze on Pesach because it's soaked in vinegar. Mm. It doesn't have the taste of the plant at all. I mean, a little bit, but very much nullified. So, but what is chazeres? Chazeres is romaine lettuce. Nowadays, in modern Hebrew, we call that chasa, because that's also a term that the Yerushalmi says, I think, that it says, what's chazeres? Chazeres is chasa. Chazeres is chasa, which was an Aramaic word. It's the contemporary Arabic word, very similar to for romaine lettuce. So we know that chazeres really means romaine lettuce, and that's what the Chazal say is the best way to be yotze the mitzvah mar. Why? Ki bo zecher hatamor mitzad hakelach shetamo mar ktsas. That romaine lettuce is not particularly bitter, but it has a stalk that's bitter. You take off all the leaves and you get to the stalk and you eat the stalk, so that's bitter. That's pretty bitter. More bitter than the leaves. Not very bitter. Again, we were thinking if you're comparing it to horseradish, so obviously it's not an unpleasant sensation, but it's slightly bitter. So the question is, can you be yotze with the leaves that are not actually bitter? Does the mar actually have to taste bitter? So the Yerushalmi says that how could the Chachamim say that chazeres is the best way to fulfill the mitzvah of mar? Chazeres is sweet. Romaine lettuce is sweet. So the answer is no. It starts out sweet and then it gets bitter. So what does that mean? There are two different interpretations. One is that if you leave it in, that it's harvested young when it's sweeter, but if you leave it in the ground longer, it'll get bitter, which means that it doesn't have to taste bitter at all. If you harvest it at a non-bitter stage, so then it's still good because you think that this plant is bitter. So the other interpretation of what that means is that if you, when you first put it in your mouth, it tastes sweet, but if you chew it for a while, it gets bitter. So that means that it would really have to taste bitter. So, and again, here the Sefer Chinuch notes that in fact the stalk of the romaine lettuce is bitterer than the leaf of the romaine lettuce. So this is a big problem when it comes to contemporary romaine lettuce. That if you hold that it does have to taste bitter, so then you have a problem with the lettuce that it's not bitter, and you have a problem with horseradish that's not really myrrh. So what are you going to do? So some people either eat the stalk of the romaine lettuce, which actually tastes bitter. And the Chaznish held that way. The Chaznish held that the maror actually has to taste bitter, or you're not yotze. But most the accepted psak is not like that, but it still makes sense. It's a sensible shita. So some people have the practice that you use a different vegetable that tastes bitter, such as what's a vegetable that tastes bitter?
Kale.
I don't know. Maybe Endive is a popular one.
No, but there's another one. What's the curly? There's a very curly lettuce that is definitely bitter.
It's like, what's it called? A chicory? Not a chicory.
Oh, chicory.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think chicory's we used that bitter. Last year with your permission.
Yeah, probably. Sounds like Yeah. So some people use endive. The question is that one of the... Oh, that's the species that I forgot that's mentioned in the Mishnah. It's called ulshin. So ulshin in modern Hebrew means endives or chicory. So the question is whether that identification is correct. There's not as strong a tradition for that identification as there is for the chazaris, which everybody agrees, at least in theory, means romaine lettuce, maybe a bitter variety, if such a thing would exist. So... Yeah, so that's,
I wonder what
the
Yemenites use.
Yemenites have, I think Yemenites have a stronger tradition for which, for the identification of the species. So, somebody told me a story, one of my Safros teachers told a story in one of his tangents in class where he said that I think during the War of Independence when Yerushalayim was under siege, so there was a shortage of food. So somebody, it was an Ashkenazi, was complaining to, they were standing around in the, you know, in some courtyard in Yerushalayim, and the Ashkenazi complained to the to a Yemenite, you know, where are we going to get maror for the Seder this year? So the Yemenite looks down and says, move your foot, it's right there. So, you know, it's, so you see, they had more of a tradition as to what was considered maror. But basically, the strongest tradition that we have is the romaine lettuce. So most people recommend that people should use romaine lettuce. But if you want something that's actually bitter and you don't instantly not happy with the bitterness of the stalk of the romaine lettuce, so you could use endive. Technically, you could use that, and you could use. Most people would use both. Most people eat a little lettuce, a little endive. Why not? There's a nachlumers that are particularly. Much of an imposition. They're kind of fun, you know. You have your little lettuce, have a little endive at the seder, you mix them with a matzah. Okay, why not? Why not use that? There's also a question about iceberg lettuce. So are you yotzi with iceberg lettuce? So iceberg lettuce is even less bitter than romaine lettuce. So that's also a question. So it's not really bitter, but it's actually very closely related to romaine lettuce. I think it basically is romaine lettuce with just some... minor genetic mutation that caused it to have a slightly different form. I think it's very closely related to romaine lettuce. So they say Rav Aaron Cutler allowed people to use romaine lettuce to use iceberg lettuce for the maror. Okay, but normally we try to use romaine lettuce. V'gam yesh ba hidur le mitzvah yoser mi bishar asavim marim. That romaine lettuce is a more beautiful way of performing the mitzvah than other types of bitter herbs. Ki shma hidor shenikres chasa. Shma hidor. That's a strange formulation. Ki shma hidor shenikres chasa. That its very name is a beautification of the mitzvah, that it's called chasa. The Rama's brachabo. Shechas rachamano aleinu for the anu miyad hamitzri makashim. That it says that chasa sounds like God took pity on us. It's from the same as the same shoresh as taking pity. So this lettuce is like taking pity. So it's reminiscent of that as well, which is another reason we try to use romaine lettuce. Umikol eli yeshis orus v'zeichar aleiv b'nei adam binyan hanisim shenasu lanu b'mitzrayim. So here it's also going to awaken one's attention to remember the miracles that God did for us in Egypt. Very funny, you made a play on words. That lechazer achar achazeres means that we're supposed to chase after the chazeres to get it for Pesach. I'll explain the Maseches Pesachim. This is obligatory in the times of Beis Hamikdash for males who missed the Korban Pesach, but not for females. He kemosha ein shchitas Pesach sheini chova lehen ela rishus kemosha marnu b'mitzvah kudemes. So we see that we saw last time that by women the Pesach sheini is optional and not required. Kein achilas matzah marimo eino chova lehen. So obviously, if they're not required absolutely to bring the Korban Pesach sheini at all, so then they're certainly not required to eat it with a matzah and the mar. Although if they wish to do so, they may. Omivor gam ze sham masach sochem explain masach sochem. Over al ze ve achal pesach sheni mi bli matza u maror bitol aseza. and you neglected to perform this positive commandment if you ate the Pesach Sheni without the proper accompaniment of Matzah Mar. Mitzvah Shin Pei Bei is 382. Shelo lehoser klumi v'sar Pesach Sheni lemacharoso, that you're not allowed to leave over any of the meat of the Pesach Sheni for the next day. Shelo lehoser klumi v'sar Pesach Sheni lemacharoso shu yom chamisha sar b'yar. You're not allowed to leave it over to eat in the morning of the 15th of Iyar. Shenamar lo yashiru menu ad boker, not allowed to leave it over till the morning, just like the first Pesach. Kol inyana belav haba al zeh Pesach rishon akazu seder b'al parav u'sham lav sheni. That I explained all this regarding the first Pesach. They're also not allowed to leave the meat over because we want it to be eaten at the proper time, and we want it to be like make sure all the holy meat is consumed. You don't leave it. What?
I have
chabura
for this too.
Chabura, yeah. You have to make a chabura, yeah. That's why it said that you're not allowed to have chabura for the Pesach Sheni. That's all women. If Pesach Sheni falls on Shabbos, because it says that since Pesach Sheni for women is optional, so therefore the observance of Pesach Sheni is doche Shabbos. But if you have people who are not absolutely obligated in Pesach Sheni, then obviously they can't choose to violate Shabbos with their offering of the Korban Pesach Sheni. But if you have a chabura that's comprised of both men and women, that's okay. Because the men are absolutely obligated, so then they have to shech the Korban Pesach anyway. Pesach Sheni. And also, part of the idea, as we'll see in the next mitzvah also, is that when we eat the Korban Pesach, we're supposed to feel like kings. That we have our food in front of us, we eat our food, so we don't need to prepare leftovers. We don't have to have doggy bags because we'll just ask our personal chefs to make us a different dish tomorrow. We don't need to leave food over. We could treat ourselves like kings. Mitzvah Shin Pei Gimel 383. Shelo lishbor etzem mi'atzmos Pesach Sheni. You're not allowed to break a bone for the Pesach Sheni. Shelo lishbor etzem mikol atzmos haPesach Shenemar ve'etzem lo yishberuvo. That you're not allowed to break a bone, just like in Pesach Rishon. Kol inyan lav zeh mechuvan k'inyan lav habo al zeh. The Pesach Rishon beseder bo al paro v'hu sham lav ches is the eighth negative commandment. Terenu mishav im ritzon chaladas. If you want to know, look back there. So the idea is the same, that when you're breaking bones, that means you're looking for every last scrap of meat. You want to suck the marrow from the bones, and the idea is that we want to treat ourselves like kings, that we don't need to search for every last scrap of meat. Rather, we eat what's available, and we don't have to worry about getting extra. Mitzvah Shin Pei Dalet. Some people eat like this all the time. They don't break bones. Sometimes, sometimes it's funny. You see people. I happen to like chicken bones and like the parts that people don't really eat, at least not in proper company. So it's sometimes I feel really bad. Sometimes I have a large meal at home and I'm clearing the plates from guests, and the stuff that people left on their plate, I could make a whole meal of this.
Yeah.
it's a chaval to throw this out. But people have the attitude that we just take off, stick our fork into the chicken, pull off whatever meat comes off, and then after that we leave it. Probably. But that's the idea of plenty. In America, we all can, not every single person, no. but we can eat like kings, even people who are less well off, much more than they could, in previous generations in Europe, when they certainly would not let any animal that was shechted have any part of it go to waste. Nowadays, we throw this out. You go to the butcher and you want, what do you want?
What butcher?
I've been to butchers and say, can I have this? Oh, we just throw that out.
What?
Butcher? How? Why? They just throw it out because there's this culture of plenty, which is not right. Should shecht less and use more of the animal. And it's also the Rishayim at the USDA have all these ridiculous restrictions like, I also went to butcher and I wanted, why not try all these exotic things you hear about? I wanted lungs.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted lungs. I say, no, it's illegal. What?
Really?
Illegal?
It used to be.
I looked online, Taka. The USDA has declared, despite the fact that people have been very happily eating lungs for thousands of years. They have declared that lungs are not suitable for human consumption, so they're not allowed to be sold. Ridiculous.
Since when?
You can look at the time when the law was, but the government has too many restrictions on what people can eat and what they cannot eat. Let people choose for themselves. And I think they're completely wrong. Kidneys also, I think, is.
You can't get kidneys.
I think
anymore.
So. I think not. No. Also, kidneys have a problem with the kashras because not intrinsically, but it's hard. They have chalev on them,
right?
The forbidden fats. So you need to get an expert in removing all the fats. From the kidneys.
No. It's not illegal. It's not illegal.
Kidneys are not illegal?
I bought kidneys for the lab.
Oh.
The kids were doing the section.
Oh.
In the supermarket.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Oh.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, embarrassed. Oh, my God. How did you
so that's the...
I hope nobody would see me going in that kosher.
How did you manage that? Uh-huh.
Well, okay. So that's I asked at a kosher butcher, hopefully. And they did not want to give me the kidneys. Like maybe it was just because of the kashrus issue and not because of the... okay, because it's not illegal. Okay, I take it back. So, but the lungs, I did ask about the lungs. Hearts is also... hearts are legal. Hearts are legal. You can get hearts. You can get them.
Well, no.
Liver.
It's hard to find liver anymore.
I don't find it particularly hard, but okay. Mitzvah Shin Pei Daled 384. Mitzvahs tikias chatzotzros ba mikdash uva milchama. That the mitzvah to blow horns, trumpets, at the Beis HaMikdash and during a time of war. So what? This should be two different mitzvos. There's no why is it all one mitzvah? Okay, we'll see. Some people actually want to say that it should be. That when we blow, when we offer the korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, we have to blow trumpets. Behakriv kol korban. What? Every line here is difficult now. What do you mean? Every single korban? No, it's only on the, if it's necessary on every single. It's not ever necessary on every single korban. It's only on if it's true, then it's only on the communal korbanos of like the tmidim, the daily offerings, and the musafin, the extra offerings for Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and things like that. But it's not on every single korban that everyone brings, every personal korban that everyone brings. They have to blow trumpets. And also, just right off the bat, the Tevra Chinuch, the fact that he says that you're supposed to blow the trumpets in the Beis HaMikdash every day seems to be contradicted by the Pasuk. What does it say in the Pasuk? Uviyom simchaschem uvmoadechem uvrashechachechem. On the days of your joy and festivals and Rosh Chodesh, then you're supposed to blow the chatzos. It doesn't say every day. So in fact, this is a disagreement in the Sifri. The Sifri is the halachic medrash on Sefer Bamidvar and Dvarim. So the Sifri says... brings two different opinions. One is that you do it, it depends how you darshan the pasuk. So the way the Chachamim darshan it, the Tanakhama says, Uviyom simchaschem min Shabbos, uvmoadechem is holidays, and Rosh Chodeshchem is Rosh Chodesh. So you don't blow it every day. There's an alternate opinion that says that you darshan uviyom separately, so that it means every day. So that's Reb Nosson, I think it says in the Sifri. So the question, so we should paskin like the Chachamim, and indeed the Rambam paskins like the Chachamim. He says it's only on Shabbos, not every day. You don't have to blow on the regular daily korbanos. You don't have to blow the chatzrosos at all. You only have to blow them on Shabbos and Yontif. And it's also interesting that the Vilna Gaon has a different girsa in the Sifri. The Vilna Gaon says, Uviyom is Shabbos, and Simchaschem is holidays, and Moadechem is Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and Rosh Chodeshchem is Rosh Chodesh. So what's the difference? Because the Ar Girsa of the Sifri presents a little bit of a difficulty, because the darshan that the word Simchaschem, Yom Simchaschem, means Shabbos. But the problem is, you're going to tell me, if you're a brisker and you learn the Lamdas, there's no Simcha on Shabbos. Simcha is only on Yantif.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure your husband could talk about this for hours. So
that's true. That's a standard association.
That's a standard association. The Simcha is only on Yantif and not on Shabbos. So there are sources that say there is Simchat Shabbos. There are some Rishonim who say that. In fact, that was the old Girsa in the Shmona Esrei of Shabbos that they still do in Breuers. One of the only places in the world that they still do it. The Ashkenazi version was at the end of the Shmona Esrei of Shabbos, the Bracha on Shabbos, it says, V'anchileinu Hashem Elokeinu bi'avol v'ratzon Shabbos kodshecha v'yismichu v'cha Yisrael ohavei shemecha. That the children of Israel should rejoice in you who love your name. So that's why they changed it, that we copied the Sephardi version. We changed it to V'yanuchu vo Yisrael mekadesh shemecha, that the children of Israel should rest in it, not rejoice on it, because that's why the people, there are certain postgame who looked at the Ashkenazi text and said, hey, how can you say that? There's no Simcha on Shabbos. You see that maybe there is a source that there is a requirement of Simcha on Shabbos. So the Vilna Gaon solves the problem by saying Uviyom refers to Shabbos and Simchas Leilim refers to Yontif, and okay, he amends the text in the Sifri to conform with the standard halachic assumption that on Shabbos there's only oneg, enjoyment, and not simcha, joy per se. Okay, how exactly that manifests itself again in the eating and the drinking and the demeanor, okay? Uchmochein bishas hatzaros, that when there are calamities befalling the Jewish people, then you also have to blow the trumpets. Shenemar v'chiso vo milchama b'artzechem al hatzar tzareschem. When there's a war in your land, then you should blow the trumpets. Uviyom simchas kumadechem roshei chashechem zgatim machatzotzaros. All these times, you're supposed to blow the trumpets. Alu osechem v'alzivchei shalmechem. V'af Al pisha his here akosu biyom simcha umoed v'rosh chodesh lav davka. The Sefer Chinuch again is going by his opinion that it's really every day, that it's not in particular that the Chumash requires that it be done on only special days, but really it's on a daily basis. V'chol yom ayutokim amikdash v'chatzos rotz ala korban. They used to do it every day. V'chein mevor v'rosh Hashanah perik rohu bezdin. He claims that it's explicit in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Sham Rusham Hakol Chayavin Bitkiya Shofar Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. That everyone is required to hear the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, Kohanim Levim, and regular Jews. Umasma Talmudala Bagimara. The Gemara says, what do you mean? Why does it have to tell you that Kohanim Levim and Yisraelim are required to hear the shofar? Who else is there? Pshita Ihani Lo Mechayvi Mi Man Mechayvi. My bo mechayiv. Who's if not for Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim, who else is there to hear the shofar? It has to be obviously they're required to hear the shofar. Umahadale Kohanim, it's the richale. They had to tell you that the Kohanim are required to hear the shofar Rosh Hashanah. Salgadaita chamina hoel uchsev yom terua. Vani Kohani hoel vesnu beskia dechol Hashanah kula dechsev uskatem bechatzros al oloseichem. So it says, so maybe the Kohanim you think would be exempt from hearing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, because they have to hear a blast of sound from a musical instrument every day. So, since they have to hear it every day anyway, so it has to be, when the Torah says by Rosh Hashanah, Yom Teruah Yelachem, it should be a day of blast for you, that means the people who don't hear every day, people hear every day don't need a special day of blast. Umahadarle Midami, is it really similar? That's the Gemara response to that. Hasam chatzotzros hacha shofar. What do you mean? Over there it's chatzotzros, it's trumpets. And here it's a shofar, it's a different instrument. Well, how could you say that the Kohanim should be exempt from hearing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah because they have to blow the chatzotzros, the trumpets, every day? L'manu mikol makom de'v'chol Hashanah kula kolomer b'chol yom v'yom ika chatzotzros mikdash. So that's a big chiddush that Zev Rechinuch is saying over here, that this Gemara indicates that you have to blow the shofar, the trumpet every single day. That's not necessarily the conclusion that you might derive from the Gemara.
With the trumpet, did they just blow like a tekiah with the shofar?
It was katim machatzotzros. Yes, it wasn't like the shofar that you need the tekiah trua tekiah tekiah trua tekiah tekiah trua tekiah. It was just. Yep. The Amr Maseches Erchin Berksheni Ein Pochsin Me'Esrim Vachas Tkiyah B'Mikdash V'Lo Mosifin Al Arbaim Ushmona. You blow between 21 and 48 blasts, and not any fewer, and not any more. Mishor Shea Mitzvah. The reasoning is as follows. Levisha Bishasa Korban, Ayutzrichin Lechavin Daitam Yofe Be'inyono. That when you're blowing the, when you're offering the Korban, you're supposed to have in mind what the Korban means. Kimoshi Yadua Shu Nifsal B'machshavos Yaduos. The korban, when you have improper thoughts, when you offer the korban, like you're going to sprinkle the blood outside the proper time, for example, then that invalidates the korban. So your mindset can invalidate the korbans, therefore you need a sound to wake you up. Make sure you're having the proper mindset. And also, you just need to have kavana about to worship God and what the korban means, and your connection to the korban. Really, this should be me. Whatever, yeah, all the thoughts you're supposed to have when you offer the korban. And the same thing also. Again, now he's switching topics. Now he's switching to the trumpet blasts that are not when the Beis Hamikdash, but that are required when there is a calamity in Eretz Yisrael. Begamkein. So that when we daven, when there is a difficult circumstance, so we need extra kavana. So we're supposed to have kavana all the time we daven. But especially when there's a pointed reason you need to daven to God to save you from a particular thing, that it's extra important that you have the proper mindset when doing so. So then we need to blow the trumpets at such a time. Lefisha Adam Yoso Baal Chomer His Orus Godol El Hadvarim, because people have a physical existence, and therefore you need to detach yourself from your body and get into your mind. Kiateva Mibli Meir Yamod Kiyoshein. If there's nothing that wakes you up, you're going to stay sleeping. Inertia. You have to have something to break your inertia. That's like the shofar Rosh Hashanah. That's the famous Rambam in the Hilchos Tshuva, where he says that even though we don't know all the reasoning behind why God commanded us to blow the shofar Rosh Hashanah, probably part of the reasoning is that it's like an alarm clock, that it's waking you up to do tshuva. Ve'ein davar ye'orehu kemo kolos hanigun. The thing that most in the world, that most attracts the attention of human beings is
sound,
music. Music is perhaps too musical a word. What are we thinking of? Tunes, I don't know. Yadua davar v'chol shekein kol hachatzotzros. Certainly, trumpets, shu akol ha-gadol shebechol kalei anigun. That trumpets are the loudest musical instrument. Is that true? Maybe in the ancient days they were, probably so we nowadays... Nowadays, we have amplifiers,
some
right?
Kind
stereos.
Of horn, though, definitely would.
Horns are the loudest.
I'm not sure. What would be
loud?
Not a string instrument, sir.
I guess not.
Yeah.
I guess so. Vod yesh toeles nimtza bekol achatzotzros lefi adome milavad ha'his orus elekavana ki b'choach hakolus yasir ha'adam milibo machashev v'shar iskei ha'olam. That when you hear this sound, then you're going to turn your attention away from the other things that are going on with you in the world. When you are about to offer your korban and you're thinking about the stock market, so then all of a sudden, korban, yeah, okay.
Right.
Everybody who has ever heard a trumpet or a shofar will understand this. Okay, I have to leave a couple minutes. We'll continue.